Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we are here after the first weekend of Autumn International Nation. Autumn Nations Cup. There we go, Autumn Nations Cup. I'm in the rugby dungeon with JB. How are you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. And hello, Phil, who is in the... Egg Chasers TMO shipping container.
Hello. Hello, Tim. Hello, JB.
Hello, Philip.
You're the captain.
Do you enjoy the rugby this weekend, gents?
Yes and no. I mean, large parts of it, no. But you have to have large parts of no to have the small parts of yes.
Oh, agreed. It's the yin and the yang, isn't it? If it was all amazing, it wouldn't
be amazing.
It'd be like eating sugar all day long.
Exactly. Be like catching fish with drift nets. Imagine it's quite enjoyable, actually. Yeah, on a one-off, not every day.
Here's a question to kick off. Whose face did you enjoy more staring down the hacker? Owen Farrell's in the semi-final of the 2019 Rugby World Cup, or Juan Matera yesterday against the All Blacks for Argentina? Because his face watching just the big grin on his face watching the hacker with the psycho eyes was brilliant.
So for me, this game is no different to any other, which is when the hacker comes on, that is my cue to go make a coffee. So I didn't see it. Did you see it, Phil?
I did see it. I saw Matera, and I saw Matera time and time again throughout that game just be an absolute dominator, a leader, a legend. He was just incredible in that game.
It's something I was... What is going on?
I'm getting my phone ready to play a little clip of Matera.
Play the clip of Matera now so we don't have to contend with your phone.
Pablo, you're the captain. What we need to see is some leadership from you, okay? What we don't need you to do is come and push players after the whistle, okay?
I can't see a guy kicking the face of one of my men.
Okay.
It's not respect.
Yeah.
I'm breaking my country.
I understand that, but let us deal with it. We don't need you as the captain coming in. Let's show some leadership, okay?
I hate the fact that Angus Gardner at the end goes, show some leadership, okay? Because he just bloody did by going, I believe in my country, show me respect.
Yeah, he's standing up to the All Blacks. He's throwing around some All Blacks, show some leadership. Like what? like a deferential head nod.
Matera showed so much leadership in that game. He was unbelievable. And I was lucky enough to watch the full press conference just before, found some time to watch it. With him and Mario Ledesma, and it's brilliant.
Yeah.
The two of them are, you can tell how emotional they are. Mm. You can tell how much this meant to them, not just because it's the first time that Argentina have ever beaten the All Blacks, ever, but also because of the journey that they've been through. I mean, it's more than 400 days since they played their last game of rugby.
Bloody hell.
They have been spread out across the world. They've been in serious lockdown, unable to train outdoors, unable to train as a group. Even when they got to Australia, they were quarantined for 2 weeks. To beat the All Blacks under any circumstances is incredible. To beat them under the circumstances that Argentina have just been through is unbelievable. It's one of the all-time great rugby performances.
Agreed. And the breakup of the Jaguares as well, in amongst that. A lot of instability.
Mm. Yeah, it just shows.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Welsh model, isn't it? Make everyone who contributes to the team very unhappy outside of the team. And then before you know it, this is their sole reason of being.
They certainly had you certainly could tell they had a sense of purpose and togetherness. But yeah, the passion. And there's something we've talked about. We love seeing France playing a bit loose and offloading loads because it just feels very French. And actually, that's why, I mean, we'll get onto the England game in a bit. wasn't the most enjoyable game, but I quite like seeing an England pack pulverise anyone because it just feels so English.
Doesn't it?
And it's seeing an Argentinian team smashing everything that moves and practically being in tears whilst they're singing the anthem, running out on the pitch. Love it.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a theme in this podcast. It's going to be about great players. We've got some thoughts about great players in relation to Wales later. But a few weeks ago, I can't remember which player it was I was talking about, but I was talking about statement games, like players with huge reputations that don't have that one particular game which will define a career. And I'm pretty sure that was Matera's game. He had a handful of moments. I mean, for me, his greatest moment was not talking to the ref, as good as that was. It wasn't even the eyes, which is great. He made a turnover in the first half. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And he just rose from a pile of All Black bodies with a ball. Like, so no big deal.
There was one that he made in the 73rd minute, which effectively won the game.
Yes, that was the eyes one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in the All Blacks were in Argentina's 22. They'd had possession for a number of phases. There's less than 10 minutes left on the clock. Argentina 12 points up, and those are the time when if New Zealand score, then they go on to win the game. And that turnover was huge,
wasn't it?
It was. There is one element I would like to. Rugby fans can quite often be guilty of hyperbole in the wake of one result. So when Australia should have won that draw to win the first game, it's like, oh, the Aussies are back. They're back. They can win. They're resurgent. Then they got absolutely panned the next week. All of a sudden, people are going, oh, Argentina, one of the best improved teams. Matera, he's outstanding. Don't get me wrong. I love the guy. Best back row in the world. Statements like that are suddenly being made. Just whoa there. Just remember, they're facing a New Zealand team. And yes, the first win they've ever had, but they're playing New Zealand as far out from a World Cup as you can play New Zealand.
Yeah, but at a certain level, I mean, they're never going to be, well, not never. Currently, they're not looking to win a World Cup. They're looking to be competitive in the Tri Nations or whatever this thing is that they're playing. And you've got to go out and win games. And they went out and beat an All Blacks team, which made a lot of changes following the week before when they got beat by Australia. And they weren't, you know, the All Blacks weren't there to mess about. And they got panned. Let's be honest about this. They got absolutely panned. And what I love about this victory more than anything is it just shows how many different ways there are to win a rugby game. And a lot of people, particularly the people who are not so comfortable with what rugby really is, which is a game of bullying other men, will not be particularly comfortable with this, because that's exactly what Argentina did. From the very start, they started bullying the All Blacks. And you could see it with their reaction, all the silly little face taps and all the silly pushing and shoving. You know, it's a very un-All Blacks performance, both in the way they handled themselves. I mean, there was one bit when Sam Kane gets told off by Angus Gardner. And I just thought, his reaction is ridiculous. His reaction was, it wasn't a respectful yes or sort it. It was like disdain that.
I think that's probably because he was like, sorry, Angus, are you telling me something or are you asking me a question? Mate, you need to control your behaviour, mate.
I do need to control it. And they just bullied them. Dane Coles slapping people in the face, stupid. Right at the start, I just thought it was a completely alpha, manly performance. When you just saw one team beat up another team. And weirdly, the All Blacks had no answer to it whatsoever. They stuck with a game plan that wasn't working. They varied it a little bit towards the second half with a bit more kicking. They brought on some subs who came on and added a bit more energy, but the details weren't there. I mean, how often do you see the All Blacks passing the ball into touch, throwing it over people's heads? It's bizarre.
But how much of that was driven by the defensive alignment, the cohesion and fluidity of that Argentine team? Because their defence was unbelievably physical, as you said, Jay. It was also incredibly well organised, and it was only really in the whenever it was the 79th minute when Caleb Clark goes over for that try in the corner. That was one of the few times that New Zealand actually found managed to work around the defence and create an overlap.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, that, because I look at that confrontation just outside of the ruck where, you know, most of the ball carrying was, particularly from New Zealand. And they were carrying in, you know, that sort of pod of three when you hit the middle man and there's a guy at the side. And they had no variation to it. And they just kept on feeding the beast. And I don't know if they were doing that because they wanted to win the collision in order to do something else after, subsequent to that, or if they just run out of ideas. But it just didn't seem smart, because if there's one thing that the Argentine pack can do, or the Argentine players can do, it's going to be beat you up if you run straight. And they can't continue to run straight. And the scrummaging, let's not forget the scrummaging. That was absolutely quality.
Yeah, it was great to watch. The one thing the feature of the Argentinian play that I noticed was just, well, firstly, they hardly had any handling errors and hardly any missed tackles through the whole game. They were so accurate. But that accuracy was that even translated into their rucking, where there was one, I think towards the end of the first half, I watched the game again today, and they had about 20 phases, and only two or three of those 20 phases was there more than one Argentinian clearing the ball out.
Is that right?
They're just technically, timing, body position, they managed to keep the ball with so little resources. With so little,
they were resourcing
without resourcing the ruck with more than... They were so efficient.
Yeah, and don't forget Sanchez. I mean, Sanchez had a game for the ages too.
Yeah, is he? Yeah. Are his tattoos new? I don't remember him having.
He's done in the past, to be honest.
I've got to say that Argentinian stash is so classic and could be. You could.
I don't like the collar.
I love it. Other than the shape of the players, you could imagine seeing that in like sort of grainy footage from 70 years ago or something.
Genuine question. Why do shirts have collars?
Tradition.
Just aesthetics.
Yeah, I'm looking around all the shirts in the rugby dungeon and hardly any of them do anymore.
No, I don't see why you would... I mean, not going to wear a tie with it, and maybe Racing might.
Racing and Toulouse.
Yeah, but I don't see the point in having a collar. In fact, I don't even see the point in having a collar on a shirt. If you get to redesign a shirt from scratch, would you put a collar on there?
If it was started from scratch, if there was no tie involved, no.
If you never saw a shirt before in your life and you were told...
No.
No. So why do we have them?
Ties.
Yeah, which again, make no sense either. Not I'm saying that we shouldn't wear them, I'm just saying that they make no sense. So that's that detour done.
Bit of sartorial chat.
Yeah.
That stash is just...
Delightful, isn't it?
Incredible. It's just beautiful.
It's going to be interesting to see if they can keep this up. Who do they have? Is it Australia next week that they get the pleasure of playing?
Yeah, I don't know. And which of the games between Australia and New Zealand count in the Tri Nations?
That's a superb question.
So the latter two. So the first two. So the New Zealand and Australia have played four times. The first two were just warm up games. They have now completed their first and second game against each other, and this means that New Zealand, while they do currently top the table, they've played three, won one, lost two.
Yeah.
So actually the Tri Nations is wide open this
year.
It
really is. What were the questions we got sent in, Jay?
Yeah, so I've got two questions. Let me just quickly bring them up on the Twitter machine.
We are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter.
He's
at Jay Bidmore, I'm at Cocker.
I will find it... Momentarily. In fact, whilst I try and find these questions, why doesn't Tim fill this empty space with nonsense?
I know one of the questions is kind of where I was going to go with what I was saying, which is why I said, what are the questions? So
I know, ask the question, then I'll give the person credit for it later.
The reason this is a Tri-Nations competition is because South Africa didn't want any part of it. Razzie Erasmus's justification for that was that they wouldn't be ready to play international rugby. They need 400 minutes of rugby. Oh, I'm not going to do the accent. They need 400 minutes of rugby before they're ready. Argentina, in their first game, I mean, these guys have not played super rugby. They've had very little rugby, a lot of them. They've been, as you say, training in an isolated fashion and then building that up. And boom, straight out the gate against the New Zealand team that have had four matches in quick succession. And they turn them over handily. So does that kind of, you know, is that a bit of slap around the face with a wet fish for Razzie Erasmus?
Well, it might be.
There's two things to this, because we as soon as Razzie said that, we had one eye on that kind of perceived wisdom of the games, but also another eye on the negotiation strategy for South African rugby getting a better TV deal, either through SANZAAR and the Rugby Championship, or potentially looking to the Northern Hemisphere for an introduction to the Six Nations or some other strategy. And I still think that that second point is true. Razzie, part of the South African rugby strategy was about getting a better TV deal, which I understand they have got with the revised Rugby Championship going forward. But it does bring into question the perceived wisdom of how much game time you need to be match fit.
Yeah.
And I know I understand that 20 years ago, 40 years ago, and all the rest of it, that when strength and conditioning was nowhere near what it was, we didn't understand the science of training, that there was genuinely nothing like playing a rugby game in those days. These days, I would suspect that because you can get better conditioning, better strength work in a more controlled environment with less likelihood of receiving injuries, actually you could arguably be fitter and stronger and faster after a period of no games at all than you would be after a period of, well, the New Zealand players have played 8 weeks of Super Rugby Aotearoa and then 4 weeks of international rugby. They've played a lot of rugby.
As long as you modify the training to replicate that down up, the wrestle type movements and all the rest of it, then yeah, I take your point.
So I'm going to disagree here. I didn't think Phil was going to go that way. I thought you were going to say something along the lines of, you know, modern sports science tells us that we need X amount of hours in the gym or hours on the pitch or whatnot in order to be competitive. Because that's certainly what Razzie was saying. Now, I'm going to take him at his word.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, take him at his word. I'd probably have more... I think I have more respect for people in general who say it like it is. So if he'd said, look, you can see what's going on in the world and we need to be open to possibilities to, if there's a massive pile of gold somewhere else, we need to be able to go for it for the future of our game. If he'd said that, I would have had total respect and understanding for that. That probably would have been the truth, but I also understand why he can't say that.
Yeah, but I'm just going to go with... I'm going to go work on the premise that he was genuine and that he really thought his team needed 400 minutes of rugby, of any rugby whatsoever, in order to play. I do think people get a little bit caught up in how much preparation that you need, and this sort of flies in the face of everything. But that said, if you gave the Argentine players the option of whether they wanted a few warm-up games before, you know, running into the teeth of the All Blacks, they'd probably bite your hand off. So although it's not ideal, well, it worked, it's not ideal preparation. I doubt that they'd want to repeat it, no matter how successful it is.
So they did have a couple of warm-up games, as in they played like a...
They played the Aussie A team, didn't they?
Yeah, or it was like an Aussie select team, and they might have had an inter-squad game.
Yeah.
But yeah, it takes me back a few years to like playing three or four pre-season games. And I always used to hate playing three or four preseason games.
Rubbish,
partly because my injury rate was about one in every five games. So if I've lost four of my five games to preseason, it kind of makes my season pretty short.
Dicing with death.
But I do wonder about the long term perceived wisdom of you need a certain amount of games, particularly given how good strength and conditioning coaches are and how much they understand the game these days.
Yeah. What was the other question? Who was that who asked that question, JB?
Dan Connolly on Twitter.
Thank you, Dan. Know. And what was the other question?
We've already answered it. Is it a competitive Tri-Nations?
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah, very much is. All right. Here's another question.
The answer is yes.
Pivoting away. Pivacking away. Who is under more pressure, do you think, today? And who will have woken up feeling worse, Fozzie or Pivac?
Because
they're comparable. This is comparable.
Pivac, 100% Pivac. And the reason I say that is, I think you can look at the New Zealand game and say, yeah, look, you lost it here because there's a loose pass there, a loose pass here, bad decision there, bad decision, you know, in other areas. You look at the Welsh game and you think, this is rubbish. This is complete and utter rubbish. Ted on the buildings, burn the book, salt the earth. You know, it's over. You know, they're two very, very different situations. I honestly think Foster is, you know, a game away from re-establishing. I mean, that I honestly, as good as that win was for Argentina, I still think that on a different day, the All Blacks win it. And actually, on another day, they win it handily. And when they see each other again, I would still have the All Blacks a favourite.
I would just put the context here. He's just lost two in a row. He's just lost two in a row, as you said. And they are... They for Steve Hansen's reign, they won a World Cup and were the number one ranked team for years and years and years. And he's just taken over. And so I actually think when you look at the players that Ian Foster has and the players that Wayne Pivac has, I think Ian Foster would have felt worse. I mean, neither of them are going to feel great today, let's be honest.
But I think he might feel worse.
Well, I think, and
but I don't think he's under more pressure.
Oh, I disagree with that. No. It's New Zealand.
Yeah, but it's Wales. You know, Wales is awful.
The New Zealand public and press do jump on both players and coaches.
I mean,
if individual performances or even sections of individual performances do not live up to expectations.
Yeah, they are far more knowledgeable than New Zealand. I mean, I say far more knowledgeable. I don't really know because I don't read the New Zealand press. I have no exposure to them. I do know that the Welsh press are utter garbage and manned by incredibly low-grade individuals. You need to look at the people who work at Wales Online to understand the lack of rugby knowledge and IQ which goes around there. And because of that lack of understanding, I do think that it's Pivac because they have such a deluded view of what this Welsh team can achieve that they will expect them to be
world class. That's Wales Online. I think your average Wales fan, who is
mad.
What's important, again, you don't just go, it's like Twitter's not real life. There are some people inside a Twitter bubble that think people think the way that Twitter thinks and it doesn't. So I would say your average Wales fan appreciates...
How many average Welsh fans do you know? Because,
I think I know enough, and I think I have a sense of Wales fans from all of my years. No, that they are fanatical, and that's the great thing about them. They absolutely love their rugby. It's the thing that Wales and New Zealand have in common. Small nations who overperform because of a fanaticism for what is elsewhere a minority sport. But I think your average Welsh fan understands they've actually had it unusually good the last few years. And at some point, there was going to have to be a righting of the ship and a reckoning, and there's going to be some choppy waters. Whereas New Zealand, you just expected to be...
I don't think you're right there, Tim. I do not think they understand for a single second...
Really?
...that this team is not as good as they think. Because they look at the team and go, oh, well, it's fine, Wales are always going to be good. And they completely forget the fact that the Ospreys and the Scarlets and every Welsh region... have been garbage for absolutely years. They've been all right in the Pro 14 and previous to that, the Pro 12. Scarlets even won it, which is why you've got Wayne Pivac coaching Wales. I said it last week. Name the Welsh player that left Wales and did really, really well. Name the last successful Welsh team which went to Europe. You've got the Scarlets who beat La Rochelle, and before that you're going to have to go all the way back to... probably Gavin Henson in the Ospreys losing out to Leicester Tigers.
Or
a quarter.
Prior to Warren Gatland, name the outstanding Wales rugby coach.
Graham Henry? Steve Hansen?
Wasn't he terrible at Wales?
The Great Redeemer? Well, it ended badly, but it all ends... I mean, except for Warren Gatland, it all ends badly for Wales. Mike Ruddock got Six Nations. I remember that Six Nations Slam being one of the greatest rugby six weeks of my life.
I guess my point being, I think there will be enough Wales fans, if you're maybe 25 years of age and you really got into rugby in your teens, your world might be tumbling down, but most Wales fans over 30, let's say, and certainly in their 40s and 50s, we'll just roll with the punches on this. They'll go, okay.
No, they won't. They won't.
No, they won't roll with the punches, but they'll understand that they've been here before and we'll be here again. And actually, in a year's time, it might be very different.
The problem is, the Welsh fans don't understand how the sausage is made. And when you look behind the scenes of what goes on in Welsh rugby, it's absolutely gruesome. And that is the problem. Wales have been very, very lucky that they had a guy like Gatlin steering the ship, nice and steady, papering over the cracks of what is an absolutely abysmal system.
Snake pit.
Absolute snake pit. I'm Welsh and we do not cover Welsh rugby for this exact reason. It's dreadful. And now the Welsh team eventually will suffer. Gatland held this thing together for years and years and years. And Wayne Pivak, in defence of him, I think he's a good coach. I think he is up to the task. He's not up to the task of replacing Gatland. But he'll get out of this Welsh team exactly what the Welsh team has to offer. The problem is, it's not very much.
So, to go back to your question, Tim, I do think that Pivak is under more pressure. I think they're both under quite a lot of pressure, but I think Pivak's under more pressure, and there's easier outs. I expect that Fozzie will in his next couple of games get a couple of good wins, whereas Pivak, he should beat Georgia. He's then got to face England, which I think they will really struggle to do, to win. And then you could see him playing Scotland or Fiji, which could be a difficult game.
I completely agree.
Might not be much fun for Wales if that happens.
Let me float this thought to you both, and I'd like to know your theory. So I mentioned great players earlier on. And this weekend, the Welsh team that went out had a lot of players in there who are great Welsh players. And I do mean that, great Welsh players. I know you said that they're all rubbish, blah, 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 blah. Right, but when I say great Welsh players, Lions and the like.
Yeah, quite a few Lions, yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of caps, an awful lot of caps. George North came on for his 100th cap. So you got a lot of experience there. And I just wonder if the reliance on these great players, these absolute titans of their nation, is actually a little bit of a downside. And it's not because they have declined a lot. It's because all the players around them expect them to do something, expect them to pull it out of the bag. And the reality is they're no better than the player that might actually replace them. They're playing off their reputation now. And I seem to remember this, or something similar to this happening when South Africa played, not this World Cup, but the World Cup before, and they had the most experienced squad of all time or something. And it turned out they were absolutely rubbish. And it's not because the players had had rubbish careers, just they've been there too long. So we look at Italy now. I mean, Italy have relied on the powers of Sergio Parisse for God knows how long. But when I say relied on it, do we actually mean the players have stood around watching Sergio try to win games and he's just not been up to it because no one is that good? I wonder if the best option for Pivak is not to pick all the best players, but say, well, you know, look, if we're going to have a real stab at this long term, you've all got to go, and we've all got to get the kids in. Maybe that's what they need to do.
I don't agree with that. I think the difference between Pivak's Wales and Gatland's Wales fundamentally is that Gatland has a very, very simple game plan, which in international rugby, when you have limited amount of time with your squad, made Wales more competitive than they should have been. He did have a lot of excellent players who were in the prime of their career. I totally agree with that. When your captain is Alan Wynne-Jones, aged 31, 32, just, you know, tearing up trees, it is slightly different. And
I just wonder.
But what I would say is that Pivak's system, he clearly wants to do what he did at Scarlets, which is much more nuanced, much more difficult to execute. When it clicks, as with, say, Japan, it can be devastating, but it's very, very hard to achieve.
Yeah, it is hard. I wonder if all these players that he's got now are Gatland's men, aren't they? They're Gatland's Lions, actually. They're not just Gatland's Welsh team, they're Gatland's Lions. I wonder if he needs his own men, like his own lieutenants that he can lean on, who are not saying, oh, well, you know, under the old boss, we did it this way. You know, these are my guys now.
And can you name an example of one?
No, but I mean, could you...
Well,
go on.
That was the question I was going to ask Jay, because, like, I can kind of understand your principle of maybe some of these guys are a bit long in the tooth, but who would you get rid of and who would you replace them with?
I've got no idea. Genuinely, I have no idea. I know that's not a great... I don't know enough about the regions or Welsh rugby. I assume there's someone in there.
Johan Lloyd, for example?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
But he's not even getting picked to Bristol.
I tell you what the weird thing is. Where are the Scarlets lads that played under Pivac? Why are they not putting up their hands and saying, look, this is how we play this system? I mean, they seem to be completely anonymous from all this. I didn't even notice Jonathan Davis playing.
But he had them every day for years.
Yeah, but Wales are basically picked from an area of 50 square miles.
Yeah, but he doesn't have them every day.
They've got welfare policies. Most of them have played under him. I mean, it's far harder for Eddie Jones to construct his squad than it is for Wayne Pivac.
Well, no, but Wayne Pivac would have at Scarlets or any club, he would have an A side, a Colts side, all playing the same system with a whole coaching top to bottom that's feeding the system he wants.
Yeah, and there is a real value, isn't there, of just having a system which you can plug people into when you need them to be plugged into.
Which Gatland's was, and this is why it worked for the Lions as well, because it was so simple that even players from lots of different countries and clubs who play all sorts of different rugby can plug into that system, because work hard and smash people.
And it's flexible too. Like, Gatland would get players who, you know, weren't quite what he was looking for, but he'd plug them in and say, well, okay, you can't quite do that, but you can do this. Do this over and over again. You know, some of the players that you think of really great Welsh players, like Toby Faletau was not good. Jonathan Davis was not good. George North, again, was not good. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. The only one that showed some real fire, I thought, was Liam Williams when he lost his lost his temper a bit. Other than that, I thought everyone looked pretty passive.
How did anyone... Because... Yeah, I think you're right. As in, one of the few standout positives from Wales's performance was Liam Williams' aggression and anger. But like, as a backline that includes Josh Adams, Liam Williams, Jonathan Davis, Gareth Davis, and George North coming off the bench, like, they were all almost totally anonymous entirely throughout the game.
And I think Owen Watkins is a cracking player. Well, a good player.
Yeah. Good player.
And I suppose potentially a lot of that should be a compliment to Andy Farrell, who now has bedded in a system in Ireland, which is starting, it feels like, to gain a little bit of momentum.
Yeah, very unfair, isn't it, to spend all of our conversation on this game about Wales without actually acknowledging that they did play somebody else and they were good.
Yeah, but Andy Farrell had some little rocky moments in the early days, but it feels like that was an Andy Farrell team playing there. Yeah.
Do you know what? I loved the Jameson Gibson Park performance. I thought he was outstanding.
Grew up dreaming of pulling on that green
jersey. Didn't he just? Oh,
I've got, just because of my boy John Cooney, it does upset me a little bit to see naturalised Irishman Jameson Gibson Park doing that when I still think that Cooney should be there and should be getting that chance.
Yeah, but I tell you what, he's a fairly unique... Well, I don't know if he's unique. I guess he offers something different. I love the way he would be picking up the ball and then testing around the fringes. I thought he really added an extra dimension to how Ireland challenged the Welsh line. And also, what is this witchcraft of moving the Sexton loop around to the Jameson Gibson Park loop around? I mean, that's genius. They never saw that one coming. Yeah,
no, totally.
What happens if he loops around Sexton? Does the world collapse?
Those two could go into an infinite loop.
The infinite loop, yes.
I was going to mention John Cooney, because I don't begrudge Jameson Gibson Park, and I would do the same if I was Andy Farrell. So fair enough. The rules are the rules. I just hate the rules, and John Cooney is a perfect example of why I hate the rules.
Oh, I can't wait to find out how much you hate future Lion James Lowe.
Yeah, I wouldn't begrudge James Lowe. I'd wish him the very best. He's actually a lovely man. I've interviewed him a few times and he's a great bloke. I would do the same if I was James Lowe. I'd do the same if I was Andy Farrell. If Warren Gatland picks him, I'd do the same if I was Warren Gatland. I hate that is a possibility.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk about James Lowe for a second, because I thought he played phenomenally well. He is one of these players that every time he makes an intervention, something happens. I love that. I don't think he's the strongest. I don't think he's the quickest. But he makes things happen. And I do think he has... Well, Lions potential. There you go. I've said it. I think that he'll go on the Lions tour. He's exactly the sort of player that you want.
So I'd agree that he's not the quickest. He is one of the strongest wingers.
Oh, is he?
He's, his centre of gravity is so low. He's got these lovely big wide hips, this big rump, big powerful rump. And he's just so hard to knock off the ball. It's so hard to stop. I think he's a quality. I think he's an absolutely quality player.
He is, isn't he? He's very well rounded. He gets involved everywhere. He knows how to sniff out space. Like, there's nothing not to like about him.
He reminds me a little bit of Jack Noll.
Yes, that's a great example.
He comes off his wing and will come and get involved. He's got wicked step in small. He can step in a phone box, and he's tough.
Can he play flanker?
I reckon he could.
He could. Yeah.
Can he play 9 out of 10 positions like Jack Noll?
He's a similar height and weight to Ben Earl. So
is he really?
He's listed as 6'2" and 101 kg.
He's a hybrid. He's a hybrid player. One of Eddie's hybrids.
I wouldn't be surprised if Ben Earl would do an equally good job on the wing as James Lowe, actually, or vice versa. They are. Come.
I don't know. I'm just going to say we should. And we are doing now, but we should commend Ireland as well, because
absolutely,
it wasn't the simplest game for them. As in, Jacob Stockdale and Ian Henderson both ruled out on the day.
Mm-hmm.
So that changes the team dynamic. Then Sexton goes off after 20-odd minutes, after looking great for those 20 minutes. Billy Burns comes on. Billy Burns goes off after 65 minutes, and Conor Murray plays the end of the game at 10, including kicking sticks.
Yeah, Conor Murray is a fantastic player to have should you need someone to go from 9 to 10. I'm not sure he doesn't want to do that every week, but it is a luxury that the Irish have, I guess. There's two things I wanted to talk to you about then. One is the fly halves, which I'll come back to. And what was the other thing that you said? Yes, that's what I wanted to say. Did you notice the difference between the scrimmaging, Tim?
I don't think I paid enough attention.
What? How do you not notice this? Wales came to town with a bloody big front row. I mean, if you look at Rhys Carey and you look at
Francis,
they are two big boys. And Ireland came with two absolute muscle-bound hunks. And they absolutely murdered them. And I wonder if there's a bit of a story there as to like what a modern-day prop should look like. It's all right to have all this bulk and mass. But when you look at Porter lifting up Thomas Francis. I mean, Thomas Francis's feet were off the ground. You hardly ever see us in international. That's level 8.
Don't you remember? Was it Porter got absolutely pumped against Saracens? He got mullered.
He did, yeah, he did. And now
it wasn't Cock, was it?
Yeah, it would have been Cock because he'd be on the tight head.
I don't know if he started that game.
No, tight head and tight head. It'd be Mako.
Hang on.
Was it Mako?
Sorry, I'm getting it wrong. He was a...
Keane Healy.
Keane Healy lifts up...
Thomas Francis.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. But if you look at the build of those two boys, they're absolutely magnificent.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the future.
My only point was, in other games and other matchups, the same people that were doing the pumping have been pumped in recent memory, like in the Saracens game.
I mean Vincent Cock is massive, technically brilliant, and incredibly strong. I imagine that Mr. Francis is incredibly strong, and he is massive. Technically, he's proficient, but you know, styles make matchups, and he got absolutely pummeled.
Oh, he did.
It is worthwhile just pointing out that Porter is still a very young man, particularly by international prop standards. He's only 24.
Yeah.
And I seem to remember him, I might be getting this wrong, I seem to remember him playing Lucid as well, and it's only more recently that he's totally dominated or totally focused on being a tight head. So he's still got a lot of learning to go, but that was a really impressive performance. Some of those scrums were huge.
Agreed. So well played, Ireland, and
Can I just raise one more point on this?
Yeah.
So Sexton doesn't look like he's going to be available for next game.
Maybe Billy Burns not as well.
Billy Burns, head knock.
John Cooney.
Yeah, well, who's going to be next 10?
It's Cooney.
And then?
You've got the lad at Leinster, the youngster. What's his name?
Byrne?
Yeah, Byrne. Is it Ross Byrne? And you've got Harry Byrne as well.
And then?
Because Carberry's not fit, is he?
Madigan.
And then?
Haven't they got another player that's about to be Oh, we've got the guy that was at Munster, who's now qualified.
And we've got Hanrahan at Munster as well, who sometimes plays
yeah,
there.
Who was the fly-out?
They've got a young 10 as well, who I can't remember his... I'm just going to try and find his name. He's been playing for Munster.
Okay, let
tall,
me just...
A tall, rangy player.
Let me just cut to the chase. You don't mean Blundell, do you? Whatever his name is.
No.
Oh, the guy not, who hit the guy Tyler who hit Blaendale. The last minute. The guy who hit the last minute. Blaendale. That's who I was thinking of before. No, what about the guy Ben Healy? Who hit that late penalty winner.
Correct. Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say, boys, how far down the pecking order do we have to go until we get to your boy from Ulster, Paddy Jackson?
I thought you were going to go the other way.
Oh, go on.
His name's just got out of my head. Exeter Chiefs.
Steno. Out of retirement.
Steno, yeah. Retirement. He's just won back-to-back trophies. He doesn't need to retire.
Well, some people don't like to hear this, but I just think it's a fact. The second best Irish qualified fly half is Paddy Jackson.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, he's good. He's very good.
He was. I can honestly say I really, really rated Paddy Jackson. I've not seen enough of him in the last 4 years, let's say, to say whether he still has it, because he's obviously had a turbulent 4 years.
So I guess my question is, who is more likely to play in the Irish 10 shirt, Madigan or Paddy Jackson?
Madigan is playing in Ireland, which does help.
That does help.
It does help. But they want to win games, right?
I think Madigan is more likely to play.
I think Madigan is more likely to play. Yeah,
but
ridiculously.
I'm just saying it on rugby. Paddy Jackson is worthy and should be in the Ireland squad, but obviously for lots of different reasons. But mainly that he's not playing in the country.
They did make an exception for Sexton, didn't they? Everyone seems to have forgotten about that.
They did.
But that seems to be the last one because obviously Zeebo, they've not made an exception for.
With the best will in the world, Zeebo is a magnificent player and a great guy to have around.
And a good dancer, judging by his social media. Doing little TikTok dances.
Superb range of sweaters too. that said, he is not Jonathan Sexton.
No, I'm not saying him playing 10, but they do have a fullback problem.
Yeah.
Although Keenan played very well there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Ireland England if that happens, when that happens. Mm. That will be one hell of a matchup. In fact, that's not next week, is it? It's a week after. Have I got that right? Or is it next week?
It is next week.
That's going to be dynamite. Absolute dynamite.
Yeah,
so I didn't.
That is exciting.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be after France absolutely pummeled Ireland, but if Ireland managed to beat England, we could have a Worcester Warriors situation on our hands,
where the team they've beaten a team who has beaten some of the best teams in the top 14.
Exactly right. And where do you stand there? Because for a little while, Worcester Warriors were the best team in Europe.
Having beaten, was it Toulon they beat?
They beat Oyonnax. Who beat Toulon?
Yeah. So that was it.
Worcester
thank
beat
you.
The and Dean Ryan said, "We've just beaten the team that beat the team that won the European Cup."
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we revisit that quote. I wouldn't be surprised if we've misremembered it, because this thing, these things do happen. It's more like we've just beaten the team which ran Toulon really close on the weekend.
Oh, I should mention with Worcester as well, a man who really was a big part of the Six Ways development and their resurgence back to the Premiership. Cecil Duckworth passed away today.
Yeah, real shame.
Mm. Yeah,
it's nice to remember what he achieved. He took that club from basically amateur roots and then made it into the force it is today. So he will be missed.
Yeah, great rugby man. Good work, Ireland. Come on, then. Let's. We've got Scotland, Italy. We've got England. Let's talk England for a second, because I was surprised to see the way that people were talking about this game. I think even was it on one of the headlines we saw immediately after the game, England fail to impress in 40-0 win against Georgia.
So it's been important. First of all, my favourite part of the weekend was this, because I got to watch this game socially distant with Tim. So I delivered him a coffee to his door. Then I went back to my house and we watched it on Zoom live.
Yeah.
In real time. Sadly, you were busy, Phil. So yes, I actually got company to watch a rugby game for the first time in God knows how long.
We didn't totally talk about the rugby a lot of it because
there wasn't really. I can't really remember what happened actually. Although to be fair, this game really did top up my knowledge on the current COVID situation. Whether it taught me anything about rugby, I don't really know.
Yeah,
it's safe to say. You're not going to learn a huge amount from England from watching this, except for I do think that the memory of last year's World Cup final and them getting manhandled so badly by South Africa is impacting on the way they play a little bit. And that they are almost having to rebuild and reprove to themselves.
That's a great shout, Phil.
But they are a physically dominant team, and they can be a physically dominant team.
Yeah,
And that's what they did. They were exercising some of the demons from the World Cup in this game.
I think rather than talk about the game, maybe selection is more of a window into the soul here. I loved the back row which they put out. I mean, it's bloody monstrous.
Massive.
Yeah, and it's actually garnered quite a lot of criticism during the week, because obviously England have got a lot of flankers and you want to put Mario Itoje in at six. Let me tell you this much. Mario Itoje is not the world's best back row, only for the simple reason that he's too busy being the world's best second row. You know, if he wanted to be the world's best back row, I have no doubt he could be the world's best six. You would have to be insane to think that he couldn't be. So I have no problem with him being there. And if you want to, you know, shift him out one so you're a bit more physical, I think that is as good an option as any country in the world has at six, frankly.
And in conditions like this, it suits it. And I think this is what Eddie Jones has shown. When it's wetter, greasier, colder, and there's going to be a bit less rugby played out wide, that seems like a great option.
Yeah, he's a marvellous option to have because, you know, when it isn't the conditions that we saw on the weekend, you can have a mobile pack with an absolute colossus at second row. And when you don't need a colossus at second row, you can have a colossus in the back row with two even bigger men in the second row. So, you know, it works in multiple ways. Pairing Jack Willis up with him, I mean, I love Tom Curry. Obviously, I love Sam Underhill. I just like the brutality that those duo bring. I do have worries about Billy, though. I do think
I thought he looked better than he's looked in a long time.
I think that as well, actually. I thought he had a reasonable game. I think he's been good for Saracens in, you know, their last dance. But I do feel that he's a player on the decline and that he is susceptible to injury. And if they have a bigger back row, does that open up the door then to reintroduce Tom Curry? Because that's no laughing matter either.
I love this. I just want to point out, go back and listen to the podcast. I was defending Eddie trying Tom Curry out as a number 8. You were not having it at all.
Well, no, because I'd have Jack Willis at 8.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, you've got the two big guys and then you'd have Tom Curry or Underhill, if you just want, you know, to absolutely ruin someone.
Yeah.
But, you know, the options are great. I think... and of course, Ben Earl plays 8, in case you've forgotten about him. So, yeah, England...
So does Don Brandt. They have forgotten about him.
Yeah, they have.
And Simmons.
Oh. Yeah, they definitely forgot about him a long time ago, sadly.
Yeah, I don't... Yeah. Christ. I mean, those are options that... Those are problems that you want to have.
Yeah.
They are. They're pack... No complaints from the pack performance in this game, and there'll be no complaints at all from Jamie George, who was given an armchair ride to an international hat trick.
Yeah.
The back line is a bit more interesting, and the combination that he went for, which is quite an exciting young combination of Lawrence and Slade, it didn't work particularly well in this game. They got a bit of change with Joseph coming off his wing later on. And Joseph, a third 13 on the pitch at once with three 13s on the pitch and one on the bench in Marchant. But I think that's the kind of centre combination, or whatever the long-term centre combination is, it's going to need quite a bit of time to properly bed in, I think.
Well, what do you think, Tim?
I think in this, what I took away from that, and it's hard to judge because the conditions were so bad and it was new combinations and whatnot, but I came away from that thinking the player they really missed was George Ford. I think he's possibly, and it's going to be an interesting one over the next couple of years, but he's been so good over the last few years for England. And all the other pieces, when George Ford is available and can be picked, everything else just falls into place because your 12 is automatically Owen Farrell. And we've talked about how difficult that 12 position has been and how the role of a 12 is changing in rugby across the board. And then Slade has already worked beautifully with that. So has Tuolangi worked beautifully with that. I don't know. So
Slade to me looks like he is slowly but surely establishing himself as a 12. Even though this wasn't a great performance, I feel that Eddie sort of likes this now. He likes Owen at 10, unsurprisingly, and he likes Slade at 12. I think he's grown into that role. What he's going to do at 13 is beyond me. And I don't know. What do you think of the Joseph selection?
I think, personally, I think it's absolutely fine. He's got the skills. And also, if you had Ollie Lawrence in his first international game, someone who really understands defending that channel, helping him, is a great shout. But look at who's the fella? Got my. Who was the left wing for France in the last game? Who just had an absolute. Fiku. He started as a centre. He's played right across the back line. He's got skills. He's got gas. And I think Jonathan Joseph is a really experienced international rugby player. And he showed that he can do it.
I mean, you'd have to really give me a convincing argument as to why Jonathan Joseph does not play international rugby in some shirt or another. The only criticism is I just think he's so good at 13. I think defensively he's so good. Going forward, he's rapid. Like, he's just a very, very good player.
I totally agree. So giving him exposure on the wing and establishing that he can do that well, and it's not the first time he's played there, makes him the 23 shirt. Makes him a really great option for the number 23 shirt.
Yeah, I just think he's absolutely superb.
If you think someone like Max Malins and Jonathan Joseph, between them, you've got everything in the back line.
And you've got Slade on the field too.
Slade on the field as well. Yeah. And Farrell.
Yeah. And Daly.
Maybe that's what he meant by hybrids.
Yeah, there's a lot of hybrids. You've got four guys who are out and out, possibly even five guys if you count Daly, who are their primary position is considered to be 13s, but can play right across the back line.
My biggest problem here, and quite frankly, it is unconscionable to me that this has happened. If you have a team with four 13s and one of them isn't called Sam James, I think that is an absolute disgrace.
Five 13s with Daly. Daly, yeah. Josephs, Lawrence, Slade, Marchant.
I can't. I mean, there is no. He's the best 13. He might be the best back in the whole competition. He's certainly the best 13. Why he's not? I mean, it's beyond me. Beyond me.
I think Tim, maybe your point is right. Maybe the key to getting that England backline firing is George Ford. But then that raises questions in itself as to. If the way that you play is so heavily reliant on one individual player, then that is a problem.
Well, let's just remember that England. You're right about the back line. It didn't really click, but they just they ground a decent international team into paste and should have won by much more.
Yeah, they really did ground them into dust. To the point that it's like watching.
I said paste, not dust.
Oh, sorry, my bad. Well, I mean, paste is just dust with water, right? It was a wet day.
Yeah, it was a wet day, exactly.
It was very wet.
Pasty dust. I can't remember what I was going to say now. It was profound and it was right, and that's all you need to know.
The George Ford reliance.
No, it's gone. George Ford, yeah. I mean, is he injured? What's his...
Yeah.
Are you becoming...
He had a foot issue, didn't he?
Did they start him in the World Cup?
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah. Didn't they change it for the final?
Yeah, I thought they changed it for the final.
They played him against New Zealand at 10.
And
then they had him on the bench for the final.
Yeah, because did Tuolangi start?
Yeah, I think they went Tuolangi Slade. They went Farrell Tuolangi Slade for the final.
Let's just check that.
I think.
Hmm.
Maybe wrong.
No, Ford. Ford and Farrell and Tuolagi. Ford started 10.
Oh, they just changed Slade for Tuolagi in the final. And Slade was number 2.
Doesn't matter.
Slade was on the bench in the final. I guess he was.
Didn't start. Yes, Slade and Joseph. So two 13s on the bench.
Still know some, James. Fine.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So going back to the chat we've had about Australia in previous weeks, maybe England are actually the players they're producing now. It's very much like Australia. They're multi-positional, multi-skilled.
Yeah, apart from 12s.
Apart from 12s, who no one quite knows exactly what they want.
So I guess the big difference between England and Australia in that regard is when Australia get these multi-positional players, they're usually converts from league. And if they're not, they're usually brought up in a league system. So I know Gitto grew up playing league, and obviously Folau. Oh, by the way, have you noticed that they've airbrushed out Folau from The Greatest Wallabies?
No.
What was The Greatest Wallabies?
So there's some Fox Sport thing, and it's a list of, it's basically a montage of all the great Wallabies, and Israel Folau is not on there. Despite, I mean, is he not their top try scorer?
He's not far off.
Yeah, and he's certainly in terms of his rugby ability, he is almost unparalleled.
So, regardless of what you think of him and his views, He did play. Like, you can't, I mean, I know this is fashionable now to recreate the actions of Lenin when he airbrushed out Trotsky.
Just burn books, when
we're going to pretend he never played.
When civilizations would go and conquer other places, they would just destroy all statues, burn all tablets.
Oh, are we going to get to a stage where if you want to watch a historic Wallabies game, When the ball goes out to Folau, it's pixelated out, or worse still, the ball just floats in the air because they need to airbrush him. I mean, I don't know where this is going to end. At least acknowledge he played the bloody game.
Yeah, I think it patronises people.
Yeah,
to think they couldn't cope with separating the bits of an individual they don't like with a player and his rugby ability on the field whilst he was wearing the Wallaby jersey or any jersey.
I
find it quite condescending.
It's bizarre, sinister behaviour. But that, there we go.
Yeah.
Then we'll see Italy, Scotland.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah.
I did.
I really enjoyed it, actually. Yeah. I thought it was a great game.
I enjoyed it more than England. I thought it was a good game, yeah.
I thought it was good. Yeah. I thought it was good. It was inevitable, wasn't it? What was going to happen? That first half, I was getting really excited, thinking, bloody hell, yes, we're on it.
Well, Argentina had just done it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Argentina had done it. Italy were playing with real smarts. For a young team, they were playing with a lot of rugby smarts in that first half.
Well, they just threw the kids in, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, they did a little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
However, they did so because they're the best players, not because they've got rid of loads of older players that are still good enough, but they're just old. They've just got the best players. They don't have a particularly good pool of players.
They seem to have a nice balance now. That the younger 10, whose name escapes me.
Obisi.
Yes, he played well. I thought the scrum half played well. I thought Kana managed to settle everyone down. You got a little bit of flair with Minozzi. It, it's good. You know, you can get some decent carrying done by Pelledri. You know, you had it all together.
And Negri.
Yeah.
Negri likes a carry.
Did Bram Steyn play?
No.
He did, didn't he?
I think he did.
Oh, no. Oh, he didn't start though, right?
No, I think he did. I'm just saying that because...
Did he?
Yeah, because I think the reason I'm getting confused...
Was he six?
Yes, I think he's changed his facial hair.
Negri was definitely six, and he put in a few very good carries.
Yeah, anyway, point is, they seem to be going in the right direction. Now, I am very reticent to give credit to Conor O'Shea for this, because he wasn't going... Well, maybe... I don't like it when the coach goes and then they start winning and they go, you know what? It's because of that. It's the old coach that did this.
Well, which lots of people, you included, I might add, did
Stuart Lancaster. Well, it's not. I didn't do that. I don't go around saying it's Stuart Lancaster the reason that Eddie Jones wins games.
No. I thought you were saying the opposite is true. Like, you people don't give credit for the things that a coach did to lay the foundations for the next person.
Exactly right, and nor should they.
Okay.
You know, international rugby is about winning now. Otherwise, you know, like you say, Tim, it's win your next game.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So
agree.
Two
things can be true at once.
You can go, they?
You weren't good enough at the time, but you also did some really positive things that are going to bear fruit in years to come. Stuart Lancaster, that was the case, and Conor O'Shea, that was the case.
Yeah, but that isn't two things true at the same time, is it? If you're establishing things for the future, you weren't good enough at that time. So now
they're two separate points, aren't they?
Two separate. It's like it's like Jose Mourinho as a football manager never ever does anything for the club long term.
Mm.
When he's successful, he wins trophies for a few years, never brings through youth players.
That's kind of my point.
Might actually do more long term damage, but he'll win you some trophies.
Yeah, that's sort of. Well, that's kind of my point.
Maybe Stuart Lancaster and Conor O'Shea have been the opposite for Italy and England. They did more long-term good.
Which, by definition, if your thought is win your next game, if that's the definition of a good coach, then they can't be a good international coach.
Oh, well, no.
Do you see what I mean?
On that basis, yes, but...
They are mutually exclusive. Anyway, doesn't really matter. I think it was a good performance. And if they carry on like this, who knows? They might win a game.
Yeah. They could win a game if they're allowed to play their games, because they are obviously due to play Fiji next week,
yeah.
Which was part of the cancelled French game.
Which was probably the game I was looking forward to most all weekend. What is the Fiji story? Fiji? Is it just an outbreak within the Fiji camp?
Yeah, I think that was it.
I think it is.
They just put the other sides and the other fixtures at risk. So,
yeah, it's a real shame. I mean, I guess that's what happens when you go out drinking with Saracens boys, isn't it? It was inevitable. I mean, how could it go any other way?
Yeah, so it was positive test from the Fiji squad.
It was just on Scotland briefly, much like with Andy Farrell. There's a bit of identity really coming through with the Scotland team. They've got a way that they play. They don't have the biggest players, but they get around that. They're pretty ferocious on the deck at the breakdown.
Yeah,
and they've got some ballers in the backs who, when it's right, and there's some guys that I don't necessarily think are or don't always look great, but it seemed to really do a job. Chris Harris always seems to do a really solid job.
I love Chris Harris. I think he is massively underrated, which is a strange thing to say because quite often he comes off the field as one of the best players. I wonder if it's the contrast that he brings, because he's such a heavy carrier. He's strong, and if you surround him with people like, well, Finn Russell, well, just Finn Russell really, you know, he is going to look strong.
Or Duncan Weir.
Or
Finn Russell
Weir.
Or Duncan Weir.
And he did pretty well, in fairness to him. It's good to see him back.
Yeah, it was. I've always quite liked Duncan Weir. And he put in a solid all-round performance.
Yeah, he did well when
he should
asked...
have had that try.
Oh, yes.
Should have been given that. They should have just overlooked that sneaky little forward pass. Just give it to Duncan Weir.
Too sneaky by half. Mm. The Italian scrum demolished Scotland to start with, and then they seem to have sort of fallen off a bit. And I guess that would be the difference, which is they don't have the quality to maintain it throughout the whole 80 minutes.
Well, it's a lot harder. Yeah. It's a lot harder now that the 5-year rule's been brought in for Scotland, because they managed to bring one Saffer on at prop, Ollie Kebble, who sort of solidified it a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, we could do with some more South Africans playing for Italy, to be fair.
In fairness, Tim, they did bring two Saffers off because WP Nell came off the bench as well.
Correct. WP Nell's not from the Isle of Skye. Is that what you're saying?
I don't think so.
Wow, did not know that.
Just one point of order. Just to let you know as well, we will have a midweek domestic podcast, an MWDP, looking ahead to the start of the Premiership, which starts on Friday night.
Crikey.
Ridiculous. Two games on Friday night. All games on BT Sport, of course, across the weekend. Consequently, also a reminder, get your mates together to do a fantasy rugby draft league. One thing that has changed is you can do an 8-team league rather than a 10-team league.
What?
So you might only need to get 7 mates together if that is the case.
Yeah, so for instance, if I wasn't on a rugby podcast,
yeah,
I probably could only play in an 8-team league.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wouldn't have enough clout in, you know, the general pop to get 10.
We pity you and join in with you. But also on that, let's see how many of the top 10 rated players. So they've got their draft ranking.
Oh, yeah.
Has now been published by Fantasy Rugby Draft. So see if you guys can guess. Let's have a little game. Who can get the most out of the top 10?
Most what?
Okay. You take it in terms of a guess. Who have been rated top 10 in this season's Fantasy Rugby Draft? So the Fantasy Rugby Draft guys have gone down and gone who they predict the most valuable players will be.
Got you. I thought it was a leading question because Tim was going to be, it's going to be like the 10 most valuable managers or something, and Tim was going to be number one. We're going to have to go through, we have to guess hundreds of names so we can say Tim at the end.
So Tim, just for clarity, this is not top scorers from last season.
No.
And it's not the most picked players or the no. earliest picked players.
No, average, it's just it's based on the ranking that they have assigned players, which is arbitrary and we may disagree, but that's what they've gone for. So I'll let you take it in turns to guess, and like family fortune style, who can get the most top answers. JB, you go first.
So I will guess, with my first guess, Rob Dupree.
Rob Dupree is... it's quite surprising he went for a Sale player to start with. He's ranked 24.
Oh, okay.
Phil.
I'm amazed you didn't go for Sam James, but not at all surprised you went for a Sale player, maybe. Yeah. My first pick in the 2020-2021 Fantasy Rugby Draft is... Semi Randranda.
He is ranked number one.
But he doesn't kick. That's ridiculous.
But he beats so many defenders. And
Fine. If we
and he will not be in the Six Nations.
All right. Another guy who won't be in the Six Nations. Oh, do you want to have a go? Oh, no.
I'm looking at the list. I'm happy to. I'll play this game, yeah.
Sort of odds that you like, Cocker. okay. Well, in that case, okay, I think I know how this is developing now. I will go with Charles Piatow.
He is ranked number 3.
Give me Sam Simmons.
Ranked number 2.
Wow.
Phil's got one and two.
Faf de Klerk.
No way.
Scrum halves do not score highly at
but
all.
But he kicks.
He's not on the first page. I'm gonna have a look. Scrum halves. I bet he's not even the highest ranked scrum half.
That's nonsense. Of course he is.
Scrum halves, he is the third highest scrum half and he's ranked 38 overall.
Well, that's just wrong, isn't it? Other fantasy games are available.
Phil, do a couple more.
Give me Sam Simmons' brother, Joe.
Ah, that's my next guess.
Joe Simmons, ranked number 10.
Is that it?
Oh. Could be higher.
I want to get someone who's unusual.
So you've got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 you haven't got.
Let me just think of someone who's a little bit more esoteric. let's pick Daniel Cipriani.
No.
Sippers.
No chance.
He doesn't kick at Gloucester.
Oh, he doesn't, does he?
Do you want to pick again?
Yes, I do.
Go on.
it's just a bad pick, JB. Move on. I'm going to pick Ollie Thorley.
Ollie Thorley, ranked number 6.
How is Ollie Thorley? Hang on.
Because he beats
that?
Defenders for fun. He scores tries. He won me the game against Phil in the quarter final.
He's
basically
also in the Six Nations.
Well, he's not, though, is he?
Probably.
He might be.
Maybe.
He may be. He'd be a risky pick. But if he's not an England player, he'll be an absolute dynamite.
Yeah.
Okay. Jacob. Hang on. Does he kick? Jimmy Gopeth.
Jimmy Gopeth is ranked number 14.
Oh, this is a joke.
Phil's won it by a mile. Oh, let me fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
So 10 to 1 is Joe Simmons, Marcus Smith, Lewis Rhys-Zammit, Max Malins. 6 is Ollie Thorley. 5 is Ben Earl. How did you not pick Ben Earl? He was your boy. He was your boy this year.
Because of England.
Mm. Number 4, Nemanja Nandolo. I'm not sure about that.
I'm not sure about that.
He'll get quite a lot of game time.
Yeah, but yeah, we're in a team with no director of rugby that don't score any points, with no fly half or scrum half.
It's quite interesting looking at this top 10, and then we've already got the top 3, Piertau, Simmons, Randra, but that means Naira Voro has dropped out of... He was like number 1 last year, and he's not even in the top 25 this year.
He's hardly been playing.
I know.
As in, he's been playing on the bench a lot, and when he has been playing, just Northampton have been doing nothing.
I need to do a bit of work. He's ranked number 30 this year. I need to do a bit of work looking at the draft boards to prep for Wednesday night. Although, you need to change our draft time, JB, because it says it's in 1 day and 21 hours, which is Tuesday night. We need to make sure it's Wednesday
night. I'll get on to the league secretary about that.
Good.
It's league commissioner, isn't it, Ollie Poole?
No, I'm league commissioner, like head of state, like the Queen, although I have no actual functional power or administrative role. That goes down to the league secretary, as you well know.
Can you also tell the league secretary to add in a loser semi-final, final as well?
Will do. All over that.
Good.
So next week's games. Oh, do you want to talk about Jordan Murphy? Or do you want to save that for a different podcast?
Yeah, of course. Let's talk about that here, and then we'll touch upon it, I'm sure, in the Premiership preview as well. But yeah, Leicester Tigers had a Friday, no Monday morning meeting this week.
It was decided not in the Monday morning meeting, I have no doubt about that.
It was a Friday afternoon announcement, anyway, of Jordan Murphy's, the ending of a very, very long and very distinguished career at Leicester Tigers.
Oh, it's so sad. I think that's the main takeaway. I mean, I wouldn't have had him as director of rugby anyway. I think it'd been much healthier for him to go when he was learning his trade as a coach. Allegedly, he had offers from both Cardiff Blues and Northampton to go for roles there. And I just think it'd be far more healthy for him if he'd have left. Because maybe this relationship's repairable one day. I'm sure he'll always be welcome at Welford Road, but it just isn't the way I would like to see a guy like that leave the club. It's a problem, too, because Leicester Tigers seem utterly directionless. We talk about the coaches over and over again. They've got just add more and more coaches to the mix. I don't think Peter Tom's particularly interested now. I mean, he wants to sell the club. But he also wants to sell it at a profit. There again, where is the profit in rugby clubs? Where is the profit in sport in general at the moment? So, Leicester Tigers, if you weren't taking seriously the prospect for relegation next year, I think you want to be taking it pretty seriously right now.
Yeah, I certainly would have that worry if I were a Leicester Tigers fan. Albeit, maybe this is exactly what they need. Maybe... because Jordan Murphy has been such a huge part of the club for so long, through both the good times when he was a player, but also the bad times since he's finished playing, as Leicester have slowly deteriorated as a rugby power. Maybe this is the shake-up that they need. And I thought it was interesting to see that the Leicester Tigers official statement... while it said that there was no one taking over the director of rugby role, it specifically referenced Steve Borthwick as understanding the expectations that are on his shoulders now, meaning that he is taking the lead role in the coaching setup rather than someone else who has done that kind of role before in Mike Ford.
I mean, what a gamble, eh? What an utter gamble with such a great club. I thought it was a gamble to put Jordan Murphy in charge there. They surrounded him with different people to help him along. They've got rid of Simon Cohen, whose background is in agency. And despite what people might think about Simon Cohen, he was the guy who went and scouted the players. Whether that's successful or not, I mean, you can make up your own mind. But you know, that's another part of the jigsaw that is now gone. It's not obvious that they've tried to replace that knowledge, or even that they felt it necessary to do so. And then you've got Borthwick stepping up, who allegedly is an incredible coach, an incredible line-out coach. He's done a skills coaching role for England. He's done all sorts of stuff, but he has never been the head man. And it doesn't answer any of the questions around Leicester Tigers, which have always been posed, such as who is in charge of recruitment, who is in charge of salary cap, who is in... You know, before it was a bit of a... Well, you kind of knew it was a mishmash. Now I have no idea. Is Andrea Pinchin doing the same role as Simon Cohen used to? Is she going out and scouting the players? They've lost Jed Glynn too, who was the head of rugby. He's disappeared. I don't know who does his job. Was it even a necessary job? You know, you've got all, and also you've got to think about all the other people that have left prior to Jordan Murphy. Stankovic went, Richard Blaise went, there's another one as well whose name escapes me.
One of the deacons
maybe. But, you know, it's also piecemeal, isn't it? There's no overarching strategy. It's not like they just brought in a new guy and said, look, you take over. You know, Andrea Pinchin has come in as an underling from Simon Cohen. I think she was their chief operating officer. Hang on. Yes, before becoming the CEO. So, again, there's more questions.
This was unfortunately looking inevitable when Steve Borthwick came in. I mean,
Yeah, you're right, Tim.
It was looking inevitable, and it's a real shame. I think it's one of those situations where, in really tough times, Jordan Murphy was handed the reins, and much like Martin Johnson with England, you could have had someone that could have been outstanding, who was handed a really difficult job before they were ready, yeah. And it's just left a really sour taste.
You wonder, don't you, now? Looking back at it, how much of this club was held together by Richard Cockerell? You know, how much was his experience with the players and his way of working papering over the cracks? Because when he goes, and also Leicester Tigers, for a club that prides itself on its history and, you know, all the people surrounded by it, they have really left a bitter taste in the mouths of, you know, Dean Richards, certainly, probably Richard Cockerell now.
Rory Underwood's another one that's left.
Yeah, I mean, he was on... I mean, that was a bizarre situation that they had. Was it the rugby committee? Mm-hmm. Like, it reminded me of the old coalition government when they had the quad, like four people meet up and they decide which players the coach has and which ones they don't. Let the coach decide. Or a scout or director of rugby or somebody.
Yeah. It's a real sad end because he's a lovely bloke. He won everything. He was a massive part of everything that was great about Leicester Tigers through the glory years. And I just feel sorry for him that he was given that job at that time with everything else going on. Because yeah. I'm not sure anyone could have done a great deal better.
Yeah, and the sad thing is, what does he do? Turn it down? Like, it's probably been the job he's dreamt of having for God knows how long. Probably his, you know, since he became a coach, maybe even before that, when he's been captaining the side. And you can't turn it down. You can't turn down Leicester Tigers if you are Leicester Tigers through and through. And it's just a poison chalice. Mm. So I'm sure he'll land on his feet somewhere, and I think it'll be great for him to go somewhere else and, you know, experience it. I mean, he's been in the same club for 22 years. There are different ways of doing things, and I hope he goes and finds somewhere where he can learn and build himself up again.
It's a tough time for anyone, player, coach, or whatever, to be out of a job. So hopefully he had a nice long contract which has been paid out.
Yeah, because Leicester Tigers are famous for paying out long contracts of people that they get rid of on a whim.
Yeah, let's not go there. Let's not go there. Any other business, gents?
Well, next week's games would be business-ish.
Yeah,
businessy, I guess.
Yeah. So we'll cover the Premiership games, as you said before, Tim, in the MWDP that will be popping into your feed hopefully on Wednesday morning,
yeah,
Tuesday night. But the Autumn Nations Cup games, subject to no more outbreaks of SARS-CoV-2, are... So we have got on Saturday at 3 o'clock, England hosted Ireland, which is probably the game of the week.
Yes, it certainly is.
This is at Twickenham. Not that there's going to be any crowd, but Twickenham home advantage for England.
I don't know. I shouldn't be asking this now, but I'm going to ask it now because I've got you on the line, Phil, and I know you're very learned and very experienced. Just on the SARS-CoV-2, just on the whole COVID thing, I've just noticed there's a story saying Boris Johnson is self-isolating for 2 weeks because he came into contact with someone who tested positive. But he's had it, right?
Yes.
So what's that about? I'm thinking about this for rugby point of view. There will be clubs thinking, probably might have the same thoughts if they've got players that have had it.
Yes, yeah. Phil. Tell me what, as a quantity surveyor, what do you think?
Yeah. No, I just know Phil reads everything and he knows, and he also, unlike you, who will talk to your wife about her day at work at hospital, Phil would go into great depth and find out the epidemiological cutting edge from the front line of the NHS.
As if I would do that, I would read something on Twitter from my curated feed.
And also, the one question I have is, like, he's got it, he's had it, so he can't get it again. But if he can get it again, then what good is a vaccine? Because a vaccine is only replicating what would happen to you if you got it.
I don't know.
So I think the answer to this is because we don't know. I've read that there has been some very small cases where they believe people have tested positive twice, genuinely had the virus twice, and been potentially contagious.
Yeah, they're more likely to be immunity anomalies rather than, bearing in mind the numbers so small. But anyway,
if he is isolating, my only hope is it's true isolation and that he doesn't have any contact with the outside world whatsoever, because I think we could do with 2 weeks without him. So that would be my overriding.
Well, yeah, I wonder if it might have been quite an opportunistic. Quick, find someone with COVID. We can stand him next to you, so we can just hide him for a couple of weeks.
Or he wants to go on holiday. I mean, you know, that's the sort of thing which I think I would try. a couple of weeks off, fly off to Greece. I don't know.
Oh, dearie me.
Why not?
I'm not anyway, sorry, back to rugby. So these Fiji are far, hopefully, touch wood, the game goes ahead. And, game of the weekend. Go back to that. What were you saying?
So, 3 o'clock on Saturday, England versus Ireland.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love it.
Nice, nice, nice.
So, how do you see this going?
How do I see this going? So let's assume that they put out the same teams. I know that's... Is that a good assumption?
Broadly speaking, like, there'll be minor changes.
England will change a few.
And Ireland show up with which fly half?
Ooh,
good question.
Gareth Steenson.
Well, obviously, Ireland win. We don't need to talk about that too much. If Gareth Steenson doesn't start, they're not going to... They wouldn't go with Conor. Is that mental to even mention they might look at Conor Murray?
No, they'd get in one of the Byrne boys.
Yeah, they would have to.
Ross Byrne.
So one of the Byrne boys comes in. I've seen him play before. He's very, very, very good. Ultimately, one player shouldn't make that much of a difference. Let's look at the packs. Very impressed with Ireland's pack. I love the physicality Quinn Rewbort. That said, if Henderson's available, and is he likely to be available?
I don't know, is the honest answer.
Yeah.
But their back row, these youngsters are looking the absolute bollocks, aren't they? That back row is going to be huge. What a test for Caelan Doris.
Caelan Doris is great. Omani's great. And who's the third one that they went with?
Van der Fleer.
I was going to say, take your pick. It was Van der Fleer on this occasion, but there's other guys.
So I like them. I like all three of them. Mm. But I do not nearly like them as much as their England opposition. I even a matchup with the wily old Omani does not go down well if he's got to deal with Itoje all day long. That man is just a different beast. I think Willis might be one of the if Tom Curry's really, 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 really outstanding. Like, I think Tom Curry is easily good enough to get in the Irish back row and command the place. I think Willis has got the potential to be even better than that. I mean, I think he can be incredible. the Irish back row is good. I think the English back row batters them.
Yeah. The one position I think Ireland could, we could be talking about on Saturday evening as what a crucial position is, it's like a Bundiaki type character in the centre. I think he could,
yes,
he could wreak havoc against England.
Yeah, definitely.
Bundiaki, Henshaw and Farrell. Chris Farrell, who started there.
Farrell's
this weekend.
Big old physical brute.
Tough.
They're both big, strong boys. Farrell is a very big, strong boy.
And So, a few things now. I wonder if Ireland can replicate what happened to Ireland when England played them and England beat them. And I thought England didn't have a chance pre-World Cup. And they just ran physical runners down the middle. They've got Henshaw, and who, by the way, is big, but he's not physical in the same way as, say, a Tuolangi is. Farrell is that kind of physicality, though. Farrell can really smash holes.
Farrell's 110 kg.
That's a big boy.
That is a big boy.
He's real quick with it, isn't he?
Yeah. So, big fan of that. The other thing as well is, can they move the English forwards about? So that's what I really loved about the Gibson Park performance, is he makes everyone at the base of ruck stand still, because you can't leave your positions, because if you take your eye off him, he's going to go through a gap. Mm. So they do have some real weapons. That said, I just think England are going to absolutely sledgehammer them.
I don't think England will sledgehammer them, but I think they will win by more than a score. 10 points. 27-17.
Eight,
something like that.
8 points. Yeah. Phil, you can't see me, but I've been sat here and I like to fidget. I've got a biro and I've doodled all over my legs.
Yeah, it's drawn all over his legs.
I was just looking at my knee then. It reminds me of, do you remember the Bath flanker, Scaysbrook?
James Scaysbrook, yeah.
Yeah.
With a little star. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. I'm going to go England by 8.
Yeah, I think England will win, but it's going to be a really, really close game. And it'll come down to a little bit of discipline and who keeps their composure and gives the opposition fewer opportunities to take points. And I think kicks will be the difference game.
And no disrespect to Georgia either. In fact, all Wales, actually. But I'll stick with Georgia on this point. England didn't really get to stretch their legs. I don't think we saw the best. I mean, I'm not sure Jack Willis even made a turnover. Itoje was not, having one of his great... I mean, he's very, very good. One of his greatest games. Against Ireland, once the intensity goes up and the competition goes up, I think you see another several gears to this England team, and that's when they're going to get very, very dangerous.
I think is a really good point on England's game against Georgia, which we didn't talk about very much, but England hardly had to practice their defence, because Georgia, they worked unbelievably hard in defence. They forced a turnover, and then almost every time they immediately turned it over again. So Georgia never spent any considerable amount of time attacking the England team. So England... There are things like Jack Willis's turnovers that you simply did not see.
Yeah.
And that will be severely tested by Ireland, because one thing that Ireland did very well against Wales was their composure. When they got into the red zone, they were composed and they were happy retaining the ball for phase after phase after phase after phase and forcing the opportunity to take some points.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this now. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this, because I don't think England will give them that. Give him the armchair ride that Wales did.
No. The other game, 5:15, and this is from, what's it called? Group 1, Pool 1. Group A.
Uh-huh.
Is Wales versus Georgia.
Okay. So I assume Wales will win. That's about as much as I'm willing to say about this game.
It's a good game for Wales to pivot, to actually get a performance and get a win for the first time since Italy at the start of the Six Nations this year.
Yeah. You're right, actually. So that will be the interesting thing. How do Wales get this win? Because let's assume that they do win. Do they win doing what the players want? Or do they get the win doing what Wayne Pivak wants? I think how they get this win is going to be really important. Like, if you see a very Pivak-y type performance like you would see in the Scarlets, all of a sudden think, okay, well, maybe they're getting the hang of this. If they win basically off their own back, you know, do you want players go a bit rogue or whatnot, or they just go out there and play the game that they want to play, I think it could actually further sow division.
Yeah, and on Georgia, I think they'll spy an opportunity. They'll think, right, we've got a chance here, guys. Because, like you said, watching Wales, I think Wales will win comfortably. But there's a lot of people, I think, on the Georgia subject and Georgia v Italy, sometimes when Italy get hammered by someone, they go, oh, they shouldn't be in the Six Nations, give someone else a chance. When Georgia get pumped, they go, see, you shouldn't put them in the Six Nations. I think there's a lot of people that think, as I do, which isn't you should put Georgia in the Six Nations or Italy should be out or any variation of the two. It's I want to see a pathway where someone can aspire to, whether it's by a playoff game or whatever, that you can have the aspiration and the possibility and the opportunity which will feed the development of a nation. I just think people might look at some of the outcomes of these games, and had Italy won against Scotland, people would have just said, right, that's it, leave it as it is. If Georgia sneak a win against Wales, which I don't see happening, but if they did, then equally people will start saying, get Italy out, get Georgia in. It's all bollocks. I just wish there was some joined up thinking in a pathway.
I will say this, and it comes with its own problems, but I think the Autumn Nations Cup, I mean, I'm a purist. Six Nations stays the Six Nations as far as I'm concerned. Best annual tournament of almost any sport played anywhere. That said, the Autumn Nations Cup does give you some really interesting alternatives, doesn't it? Because they've got six teams playing less games in this format, and that last weekend is really interesting because then you've got
first v second, third v fourth,
yeah,
or the two first places, two second places, two third places.
I mean, if we thought Super Saturday was good fun, imagine what this will be like. So I guess
it's not going to feel the same. Like coming second in an Autumn Nations Cup versus coming first, you're not going to go, oh well. Whereas Six Nations, yeah.
I'm not really.
Which is why I don't want the Autumn Nations Cup to be an annual fixture in the calendar.
No, but
with the same teams every year, because it would just dilute what's special about the Six
Nations.
You're
100% right about that. But what I do like about it is I love the idea of that last day when you start with, at your least drunk, with the least good game.
Yeah.
And then it slowly progresses. Or maybe there's a better way to do it. Maybe you start off with the 3-4 game, right? So you're excited. And then when you're sort of merry, you've got the other game. And then you have the crescendo, you know, right about peak drinking. And, you know, there's only three fixtures here. I think I could fit in an extra fixture. So we go 1 o'clock. What would it be? 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock?
There are four fixtures, aren't there?
Is it two on Sunday?
There's one on Sunday.
Yeah.
Is there one on Friday night then? What's the other game?
No, so there's according to what I'm looking at, you've got... the finals day on the 5th of December, you've got... first game at 12, then at 2:15, then at 4:45, and then the England's game is on the Sunday. Now, you will also have the morning fixture of the Tri Nations on
yes.
the 5th, which might be the culmination of the Tri Nations, actually.
Hold on, and we're out of lockdown then, aren't we?
Yes.
We are.
Running wild.
Like, are we tier three? Does that mean pubs aren't open, or does that mean you have to be...
It means you go to East Cheshire, mate. I mean, yeah, it doesn't mean anything. It means you observe the lockdown strictly.
Oh, my goodness.
You don't go to Audley Edge for any reason, not even to watch a rugby.
Can I come and do some refurbishments at Didsbury Tock H in the clubhouse, do some painting and work there, and just the TV will happen to be on and...
Exactly. Well, I mean...
Get sure some refreshments.
Sure we can sort something out. Yeah, you're right. It might be the combination. But also, just to add to my fantasy, I love watching France kick off in the autumn at, well, the later games.
Oh, the latest games.
Yeah.
So, am I right?
8 or 9 p.m.
Oh, the 9 p.m. game is glorious. I mean, it really is. You've just had a hard game of rugby. You've watched many, many internationals. You think, oh, that's it now. I'll just have a few more pints and go home. And then France kick off. It is. It's wonderful. It really is wonderful winter.
Love that.
Wonderful winter feeling. So, yeah, that's how So I think the Autumn Nations Cup thing, there are some lessons here. Because with that format, you can effectively add two more teams. The downside to that format is, of course, you're just removing the problem of not having a pathway from Georgia and giving it to Romania or giving it to Russia. and where does it end?
So, Tim, just on the point, it was mentioned this weekend, but that was the first time that England have ever played Georgia outside of a World Cup.
Is it really?
And that, and I don't want the Autumn Nations Cup to be a thing, but just more regular games. Not even, I'm not saying once a year, but the first time ever outside of a World Cup does seem a bit ridiculous for England to be playing Georgia.
You're absolutely right, that is ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. And just on the kind of funding and development, think of it as an investment in the future of the game, which will bear fruit and
yes,
and cascade money down for everyone. And on that, to that end, keep an eye out for a documentary that I think it might be on Amazon, actually. On Tuesday, it goes live, that Dan Leo's been heavily involved in, about the Pacific Nations. I can't remember what the name of it's called. There's been a bunch of contributors that actually feature on it, including people like James Haskell, because he was in part of that game where Samoa nearly stood down and boycotted the game because they weren't getting any cash whatsoever. And at the time, there was talk of the England players giving them half their match fee, but that never happened. But if you remember that, and I think Ben Ryan's got some things to say, and apparently what I'm hearing about it is it's pretty punchy.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Works excellent.
So that's on Tuesday.
How do you find it?
I think it's on Amazon.
Is it?
I'm just looking. So it's Oceans Apart.
That's the one.
Is the name of
not Oceans 15.
Oh, what an opportunity there. Damn it.
Right, have we got any more matches?
So the other games in Group B we have got Italy versus Fiji, which I really hope goes ahead.
Yeah.
I hope goes ahead with close to full strength teams. That should be a really good game.
That's a nice curtain raiser. Real nice curtain raiser.
Yeah, I think that would be a really good game. Because Italy, they showed some really nice... I mean, the Menozzi try was brilliant.
That was a great
They showed
try.
Some lovely touches, some powerful running, some good offloading, some intelligent kicking. And Fiji, we know what they bring.
Yeah. And actually, I mentioned this game last week. I'll mention it again. I just hope it's a replay of the 5 yellow card game.
Yes.
That's what I hope more than anything.
Agreed.
And then France playing, which means France win.
Scotland host France. Scotland, the only team to beat France in the Six Nations last year, this year, 2020. So that's a bit of spice to it as well.
Yeah. I do have one last thing to say. And you might not want to add to this, or you might do. This Sir John Kerwin controversy isn't going away anytime soon, is it?
Of the John Kerwin thing? So here's what I saw from that. So John Kerwin, after the New Zealand-Australia game last week, says he doesn't think red cards should be given. And then loads of people went off at him. And I think strawmanned what he was saying.
I agree.
And mischaracterised what he was saying as if he was saying red cards, high tackles should be allowed to go and play on. And it's ridiculous. We shouldn't have them. Whereas what I think he meant was, keep it 15v15, look at maybe harsher sanctions that are imposed for subsequent games, or fines, or replace the player, but have him replaced with another player, so it's 15v15. He wasn't saying high shots are okay, which is how so many people characterised what he said.
It's reckless, it's it's unsafe, it's all these things.
It's like the people that go, I want to be able to have the choice to work or to send my kids to school through this coronavirus thing, etc. You want grannies to die.
Yeah, no.
It's kind of like that with John Kerwin. You want people to get to have head injuries that mean they can never play rugby again. No. He's saying keep it 15v15.
Yeah. I want to re-emphasise this. There is a difference between the spectacle and the sport. The NFL do not, when a player is, as they call it, ejected, reduce the team to 10 men. They stay at 11 versus 11 because they think the sport is integral. In rugby, we just take off a player. Because we've always done it and therefore football does. I think the spectacle of a 14-man team can be equal to a 15-on-15. But there is a difference between the spectacle and the sport, and you can't say the sport is enhanced because we have red cards. I think that is a perfectly... I mean, I might be wrong, but it's still a perfectly reasonable position to hold.
I agree. So John Kerwin's position was a reasonable one to hold. It's an okay conversation to have, even if people go, all right, we've had a conversation, heard a different perspective, and I still would prefer to keep things as they are, instead of acting like he's just said something truly outrageous, which he hasn't. And I, actually, in some respects, I totally agree with him. I would actually, I think... Well, what I said last week, I would still maintain that. I still think if you gouged or you spat or you stamped or you did something really horrible, I think I agree with John Kerwin that I would like 15v15.
Yeah, I think so.
And red cards, let the citing panel after the game give them, and maybe you hand down longer bans, maybe you hand down bigger fines. So that, I think I actually think I agree with him, and not to be contrary, actually, because I think it's a conversation that we should be able to have.
Yeah, and I touched on this last week. You can go back and listen. The idea that you have a player on the field who is going to go out there and injure someone on purpose because they know they're going to get substituted is frankly idiotic. It's not just silly; it's idiotic.
Who's going to be the person that volunteers as the full guy for that?
So you and I, Tim,
I'll miss the next year of rugby.
Hang on. So all I need to do is I need to take a 20 grand fine, so I'll be playing this game for free, and then I miss the rest of Six Nations, so let me just add that up. Four more games.
125 grand.
Oh, perfect, yeah.
125 grand, and maybe won't, and give someone else the opportunity to wear my jersey and take my place on the longer term.
What kind of nonsense is this? If you asked me to do that, Tim, I would probably ask you to say... I would ask you, why don't you do it, mate? I'm not doing that. It's absolutely not. Maybe a player does it off their own back. And believe you me, their behaviour will change rapidly when they're 120 grand down. Rapidly. And by the way, if it's worth 125 grand to you, I don't think a red card's stopping you either. So...
So I'm quite happy with the red card situation as it is. Although I do appreciate hearing your comments and getting the perspective and being able to have a sensible conversation about it.
Which, let's be honest,
I've got no problem with red cards at all, because I think they're a very good way of changing behaviours. And also, I've said this many times before. I don't believe they ruin games. I think if your team is well set up, well organised and intelligently coached, you can win very significant games that would otherwise have been an arm wrestle with 14 men. And there's a number of examples to prove that. So
So I have a question for you, right? Just a slightly off tangent. At what point does playing with reduced numbers become dangerous?
So you've had this argument in the past, haven't you?
Yeah. So we have, say, and it's happened before, we have a red card and then we have two yellows that overlap. I don't think it is substantially dangerous, but if you are going to say it's all about player welfare and changing behaviours and this, that and the other, 13 men running at 15 men who aren't working as hard and can hit harder surely must at some point get dangerous. If you have two red cards, it's going to have to... I mean, you've got to do more carrying for a start. If two of your pack go down, who carries the ball?
Yeah, you have to do more carrying, but then...
More tackling.
But then if you go down that rabbit hole, then you start going, well, hold on, you're working too hard. 15 aside, you're doing too many carries, Bini Vunipola. You need to stop. Well, because otherwise it's dangerous. So I don't think that washes.
I think it does. Because the argument is change of behaviours, player welfare, yada yada yada. If I've got to carry twice as much ball, well, not twice as much, but
you're going down to seven men.
Well, that's okay, maybe. But maybe the guy who gets red carded is your primary ball carrier. Maybe it's like an increase of 10%, and that's a big increase.
What increase of 10% on carrying?
Yeah.
Most players carry about 10 times a game. So you're talking about one additional carry per game.
Or whatever the number is, there is definitely more risk. You can't convince me that 12 versus 15 or 13 versus 15is less risk. You can't convince me.
Tim, I think your point is exactly right. That to have that argument, you'd need to understand what the normal parameters in a game for carries are. And I'd say normal figures for carries and tackles for a player, slightly different for forwards, slightly different for backs, but somewhere between 10 and 15 carries.
Okay, let me.
If you're going to start making that argument,
let me phrase it a different
way. Start putting parameters on the number of carries for and tackles for players, which just sounds totally ludicrous.
Let me phrase it another way. Okay, there have been examples of games where players have put in superhuman efforts.
Jacques Berger against Clermont.
Thank you. That's exactly what it is.
37 tackles. Doucetoire against New Zealand.
Those are two. Right. You can definitely do that, and it is completely your choice to do so, and you are a hero. Not the overused version of hero, an actual hero. You are a hero for doing so. But it's not safe. safe.
But rugby isn't.
No, it's not. By the way, I'm not saying we should ban it. It's a perfectly acceptable risk to me, because I'm not making the argument that red cards improve safety.
No, and also, a red card, just as with a yellow card, wouldn't mean that it remains 15v15, you would still serve your sin bin period and then be replaced by a player. Is that...
I think that is the most logical way to go, because I think yellow cards are fine.
So yellow card, you sit your 10 minutes out and you may return to the field. Red card, you would sit the team would have a 10-minute sit-out period, then they can be replaced, but maybe the punishments get more severe post-game.
Yes, exactly. I think there is an argument to be made for a better spectacle, but don't kid yourself. Don't think that 14-on-15 is better for the sport. It's better for the spectacle, potentially.
Yeah. So yeah, I think John Kerwin was massively mischaracterized. But as with so many things, I think that's because we just had a conversation that is based on the reaction of people on Twitter.
Yeah. So what amazed me? Do you think he got this reaction because he is a middle-aged straight man who wears a hoodie with a jacket?
That's more egregious.
Yeah, that is absolutely disgusting.
To go on television wearing a hoodie under a blazer.
What was he thinking? Who's he appealing to?
It would have been less offensive if it was a black blazer under a black hoodie under a black blazer. At least, and it wouldn't. But the white hoodie under a black blazer. It's just awful.
He's a middle-aged man. He's a grown-up.
It is. That was dreadful.
By the way, you can wear hoodies. You're wearing a hoodie right now.
I wouldn't wear a hoodie on telly.
I've got not with a jacket, at least. You could probably maybe wear that. Yeah. I think Craig Doyle's worn a hoodie, but that's different. That's very different. The other one, Michael Leiner, wears a very small outfit with trainers. I'm not a fan of this. You've got to be
you have to be very cool to be able to pull it off.
Yeah. You can't have the persona of a maths teacher, right? You need to have something more in your locker. And those two... I wonder if it's a Southern Hemisphere thing.
The trainer thing's starting to happen more and more up here as well.
It's definitely an Argentine thing.
It's definitely an Argentine thing.
And again, that's different.
Gus Pichot, that there's wearing trainers that are more like your plimsoll pump type shoes, but Gus Pichot wore a full suit with running trainers.
Did he really?
Don't you remember the World Rugby photo?
Running trainers?
It was like proper... It was like a pair of Nike or Adidas.
I thought they were like the fashion trainers, no?
No, they weren't. They were like trainers. The ones you'd go for a run in.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of... some people can think, what does it say about society now that all the players show up to games? If you look at Exeter, they've got brogues on and they might have their Exeter tweed on, and yet the commentators, the middle-aged men, are dressing like teenagers.
But the John Kerwin... for that alone, John Kerwin... should face the wrath of the public.
Look, I don't want to get you in trouble with your employer, Tim. I'd never do that. I do think that BT Sport, some of the blazers are not as sharp as they used to be. There are still some sharp blazer wearing, but they're not quite on point like they used to be. There's just a little bit of feedback there.
Well, my thought on that, I noticed that maybe the looks had changed slightly, and my interpretation of that was people are at home more, there's not the crowd, there's not the same spectacle, so just make it feel a bit more relaxed.
I don't want to be reminded that no one's allowed out. I don't need any more reminders that my life's terrible. I want you to be dressed up and act like you're in work, but and it's a spectacle.
But it's relative to everyone else. Like, people are sat in their pyjamas. at 3 in the afternoon on a Saturday now.
Yep.
So actually, just
as I was informed,
chuck on a pair of jeans and a sweater. That'll be fine.
That's all right. I thought you were going to advocate doing BT Sport in pajamas. Come on, a day next Friday.
Well, if I were to do BT Sport in pajamas, it would be those classic cotton ones with the collar and the pocket.
Oh, nice.
Button up jobs.
Would you have one of those like little noddy hats too?
Yeah.
And
like Scrooge.
Yeah, one of those little lanterns.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. All right, I think if we're talking about bedwear, I think we can end this podcast.
Yes, a suitably irreverent place to stop.
Yeah. What was that phrase? How did the Telegraph describe it? Convivial? No.
Irrelevant and pointless? Talentless, irrelevant and pointless.
Refreshingly convivial, is it?
Refreshingly, yeah, maybe.
Refreshingly convivial, so there you go. Yeah. There was a bit of that. So, yeah, hit subscribe in your feed wherever you get your podcast, be it Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Acast, Spotify. We're everywhere you get a podcast. Just hit subscribe because we've got more coming in your feed. As you've been hearing, JB's been doing some brilliant interviews, Ian McGeeken and Rob Baxter. For more of those, he's done 4 years worth of those interviews. You can go and follow him on Rugby Dungeon. And there will be more interviews like that coming when we get some big names and the small ones and on a more regular basis on Rugby Dungeon. We've got a domestic podcast coming this week. Don't forget to get involved in Fantasy Rugby Draft. I'm at Cocker. He's at Jay Beardmore. Phil's lurking. We're at Rugby Podcast. Have I missed anything?
I think so.
No. Right. Okay. In which case, nice one for listening. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Good stuff.
Sweet.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.